Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
You know, first thing that we have to do is block out the noise. Last year we came here, there was a lot of negativity about the program. Now there's a lot of positive things going on in the program. When we get to camp, we got to forget all that. We got to get back to the fundamentals. In order for us to have a championship football team, we have to score more points on offense, do a better job of run defense, and create more turnovers. Obviously, you got to beat Alabama. I mean, that's the benchmark at LSU. We're going to have a tough road trip against them at Tuscaloosa. We've got a lot of games ahead of us and a very, very tough schedule. We got to take it one game at a time and improve during the season.
Good morning and welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Hoover, Alabama. Our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row here at the Hyatt Regency and exclusive content available on 103.7thegame.com is proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, you can give us a call on our co-equipment hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. And we can allow you to call the Arco Equipment hotline because a producer extraordinaire, the man that makes me look halfway competent, the one and only Cody Schutz, is back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Cody, before we get started about all the sports talk, my friend, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. Doing good. I hope you are still enjoying your time over in Hoover. You mentioned that you can catch us on the simulcast on LUS Fiber and all that. Got a really cool little bumper screen. I'm going to have to send you a picture of that, TV's Dylan made for us. It's really cool. It's RP3 live from SEC Media Days, and it's powered by Arco Equipment. It's a really cool little bumper. So, you know, if you're near a TV this morning, go check that out.
Yes, and by all means, we have a ton of exclusive content that we put up on 1037thegame.com yesterday from all the festivities, their stories, blog posts, and of course, some videos as well. So, if you get a little time, make sure to check that out if you want recaps of everything that happened yesterday. We'll talk about it, obviously, on today's show, recapping the first day of SEC Media Days, while also previewing day number two. So we'll get into all of that. We got a tremendous show lined up for you. We've got some guests later on, including our friend Ron Higgins, who will be here live from Tiger Details. He'll join us right here on Radio Row, plus some more special guests. But let's get right to it. LSU was the star yesterday of day one of Media Days here. We had Commissioner Greg Sankey come out. He led off things. Missouri had a little bit of buzz about themselves. They were the first team, and mainly because Kelly Bryant, the Clemson transfer, was here in the mix, the quarterback that is changing from the Tigers of the Death Valley of South Carolina to the Tigers of Columbia, Missouri. So there's a little juice there. Sankey had some things. We'll get into what he said that kind of perked up people's ears around here at the Hyatt Regency yesterday. Florida was your second team up. Not a ton of juice, so to speak. You know, Florida's and made some headlines in the off season with some off the field issues. And obviously there's some animosity between Florida and Georgia, and if Florida just carries that. But it was kind of docile, to be perfectly honest with you, about Florida yesterday. But the team that had the juice, in my opinion, was the team that we broadcast here as a member of the LSU Radio Network, and that, of course, was the LSU Tigers. You heard the clip to lead off the show from Coach O, and he led things off and let you know. And we talked about it previewing SEC Media Days last week, and Cody and I talked about it on the show, where I thought that O and his staff would very much take the same approach that they did last year. Go back last year. Last year in Atlanta at SEC Media Days, all the buzz was negative. Coach O was on the hot seat. National pundits had declared that he was going to be fired. How long would he last? Would he even last the season? So forth and so forth. That was part of the narrative. People weren't that thrilled about LSU, members of the media here, when things were all said and done. The all-SEC teams were voted on. Not many guys got any love. And LSU was actually predicted to finish fifth in its own division. Not fifth overall in the SEC, fifth in its own division. And Coach O talked about it last year, where they had all that negativity, and then they had the quarterbacks transferring out during fall camp, and then they had other players that were suspended for off-the-field issues, everything from assault to robbery. There was a lot of negativity swirling the program. And what they did, they blocked out all the noise, went out there, won 10 games, won the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl, and now are considered, once again, to be on the up. They are ascending to the top of college football. So much so that the buzz around here early is LSU could be a team. They could finally end the losing streak to Alabama. Paul Feinbaum even said it on the SEC Network yesterday. I expect them at the end of the week that they're going to be, members of the media are going to predict them to finish second in the SEC West and probably be, once again, a 10-win team. There's a lot of buzz about this team. There's a lot of buzz about this team being in the college football playoff. So that's a total, the pendulum has swung the opposite direction for LSU in a span of a year between one SEC media day and the next. But Coach O and his staff, they're going to have the same mentality, blocking out the noise. They're just going to block out the noise. Now, Coach O did say all that negative press last year during the preseason evolving his program, that actually served as fuel
for him. It was an internal motivation. There's no question about that. And anybody that knows myself or know our team, we're made of grit. And we're up to challenges. But you know what? You got to give credit to our coaching staff. You got to give credit to our football team and administration. Everybody pulled together. We talk about being one team, one heartbeat, together like that. And we showed that last year. And you know, we had a lot of players that people didn't know about. Mm-hmm. We had Cole Trace, the kicker that came through, Joe Burrow, a lot of, you know, we had Nick Brossette, had 1,000 yards rushing. So a lot of guys contributed to that success.
It's a fair point there that Coach O made. No one knew how good Cole Tracy was at that time. They did not have Joe Burrow. Remember, he was not in the mix at that time. He transferred shortly in after SEC Media Days. And also, people didn't know just how good Grant Delpit was going to be. And we'll dive in more about Delpit in the next segment. The consensus All-American, only the 9th player in LSU history to do so. He was here for Media Days as well. Coach O, though, praised his secondary. Praised his secondary. LSU has the moniker of being DBU. Them in Florida go back and forth on social media on who the real DBU is. Ohio State throws its hat in there as well. But, you know, it's not only Grant Delpit back there on the back end. There's Christian Fulton coming off an injury. There's obviously Derek Stingley Jr., the phenomenal freshman that people has much hype and buzz about him. Probably the player that has – the last player that had that much buzz and hype about him entering as a freshman, even more so than Leonard Fournette, is probably Patrick Peterson. That's what Derek Stingley brings to the table. And Coach O talked about just how good his secondary may be.
I think because of the four guys that are playing, I think that I've been around some singular guys that, you know, may have been as good or better. But I think collectively, you look at Grant Delpit, you look at Christian Fulton, who's the top-rated cornerback coming back in the league. You look at Derek Stingley, who was the number one player in the country. Derek could have started. He came practice us for a week. He could have started for us as a bowl. He's that good. And then you look at Jacoby Stephen, who's a five-star out of Tennessee, a tremendous football player. You look at Todd Harris, you look at Marcel Brooks. Backing those guys up, you got Cordell Flott, you got Jay Ward, you got Kelvin Joseph. I mean, we just have a lot of depth at that position, and those guys know how to play. And they're well coached by Bill Bush and Corey Raymond. I think that those guys are going to be a force for us this year.
Of course, he mentioned everyone in the back end. News broke afterwards about Kelvin Joseph not exactly being part of that program. And we'll dive into that later this hour as well. But he did give credit to Corey Raymond from New Iberia, the longtime secondary coach, defensive backs coach there at LSU, and the tremendous job that he does with recruiting and, more importantly, developing those prospects and turning them into NFL players. At this time last year as well, when LSU was here for SEC Media Days, and obviously it was in Atlanta, not in Hoover where we're at right now, they did not have Joe Burrow. And Coach O had nothing but positive things to say about his signal caller and what the Ohio State transfer was able to do last year and the kind of stability he's been able to bring to the program.
He came right at the right time. I think he changed our program around. He gave us some stability at the quarterback position. He gave us a leader there. He gave us a coach on the football field. I think we've only just seen the beginning of Joe Burrow. Last year, we could not run him like we wanted to. As you guys know, Miles was hurt. We're going to the spread offense. He's going to have more ability to check plays at the line of scrimmage. We're about to see what Joe Burrow is really made of. I think he's going to have a great year.
Coach O also further talked about Joe Burrow yesterday, and I loved this moment, who Burrow reminded him of, and it reminded him of one of his best friends in the world, a guy, his fellow Lafourche Parish native, and one of the best to ever do it for the New Orleans Saints, is who Coach O says Joe Burrow reminds him of.
You know, he reminds me a lot of Bobby Hebert. Bobby was a teammate of mine. Bobby had all those intangibles, was tough, could take a hit. Joe's like that. And Joe's that type of player. Joe, when he speaks, everybody listens because of the way he works. And I told somebody a little bit earlier, we had a recruiting weekend. Now, we couldn't go, but the acts of the recruits could go see our players practice on Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. I said, sure, they can go, but we don't have a practice. I said, oh, yeah. Joe got the whole team to volunteer to practice on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. No, I've never been a part of that. So his leadership skills are unbelievable.
Coach in the middle.
Coach O has nothing but love for the young man who transferred in last year from Ohio State, took over as starting quarterback during fall camp, led them to 10 wins. A lot of expectations are high this year for Joe Burrow in that offense. And you can see why. And the team respects him and loves Joe Burrow as well. His toughness, his grit, it's really gone over extremely well in the LSU locker room. We'll dive more into day one here from SEC Media Days, focusing on LSU. We'll talk more Coach O. We'll talk some Joe Burrow as well, and maybe even some Grant Delpit when we come back here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days.
You're starting your day off the right way with RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, so Louisiana and Ohio are definitely not the same place. There's a lot of differences, and there's also a lot of similarities just because it's big-time college football. But the fans are very crazy in both places. The food, Louisiana's better than Ohio food. Okay. But so here's the thing about Louisiana food. Is they don't know how to make a lot of things. They do one thing really, really well. In Ohio, there's a lot of fairly decent things. And so that's the main difference in the food. I don't know if you were asking about the food, but I kind of just went off on a tangent there. Yeah, big-time college football, both places.
Big time college football in both places. I love that. Joe Burrow just goes on a tangent about food yesterday during SEC Media Days. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, and we are broadcasting live from Radio Row here at the Hyatt Regency Hotel for SEC Media Days. Cody Schutz is back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. As I said earlier to lead off the show, LSU was definitely the star of the show yesterday, day one. Coach O was the most dynamic of all the coaches that spoke. Barry Odom at Missouri and Dan Mullen at Florida. Coach O kind of ruled the roost, so to speak. He was the star of the coaches. And you can make an argument that Joe Burrow was the same with the players. He was very charming yesterday and kind of held court. Was by far the most comfortable I had seen him in a media atmosphere. He's usually sometimes a little fidgety. He seemed to be pretty confident. He's kind of growing into that role of the madness that is being quarterback at LSU. But besides talking about food, which, as we know, is very important, he also talked about the offense. And, you know, last year they progressed. Coach O talked about it in his opening statements yesterday on stage where he said, you know, Joe Burrow learned the offense and really kind of developed as the season progressed, and he got really good towards the tail end of the year, and that, you know, they're expecting big things, not only because of Burrow and the more time that he has with this offense, with the playbook, working with Steve Ensminger, the offensive coordinator. There's also the addition of, obviously, Joe Brady to the staff, which we've talked about a lot here on the show, the former young Saints assistant that LSU was able to hire in the offseason. But they do have a lot of experience. The offensive line has some question marks. We'll get to that later in today's show when we break down what Lloyd Cushenberry had to say. But they got veteran guys coming back on the O-line. They got some veteran guys in the backfield. Jefferson's back at wide receiver. They got some pieces that they have experience coming back. And Burrow talked about that experience and how big is that for the new wrinkles in the offense that Brady and Ensminger want to implement this season for the Tigers.
So last year we had, I think, 9 or 10 new starters on offense. And so the main thing is we have everybody back. And we only lost 2 guys that really played a lot for us on offense last year. So the experience coming back is the main thing. And there's some new concepts that we have that I'm really excited about.
He also, he hinted at it there about those new concepts. Once again, they hired Joe Brady away who's been working with Drew Brees and Sean Payton, two of the best offensive minds in all of football, regardless of what level. And they did that because they want to open things up. They want to run those RPOs with Joe, okay, the run-pass option. But they also just want to open it up more, and we've heard this for years at LSU. We're going to go four wide. We're going to go five wide. We're going to use the tight end as actually a pass catcher. So forth and so forth. It's just never developed. Last year, it really didn't develop because of the injuries across the offensive line, and the offensive line struggled. So they needed to use their tight ends to block, and that kind of restricted what they could do with opening up the offense. You saw glimpses of it in the A&M game and then, of course, in the bowl game versus UCF. But Joe Brady was brought on to help open that up and actually be a modern-day offense. Joe Burrow talked about that new-look offense that they've been getting to know, getting familiar with through spring ball and now in the summer.
So the whole thing with this offense is getting our playmakers in space with accurate balls and timing and allowing them to go make plays against players that I think we can utilize their matchups.
Taking advantage of those matchups. We know Justin Jefferson is a star wide receiver who is reliable, who's very athletic, and is probably going to be playing on Sundays. A big question mark for LSU, in addition to the offensive line, and can they actually be better at pass protection, is who's going to step up and catch multiple balls a game on the other side of the field from Jefferson? Joe Burrow talked about that.
I think Terrace Marshall and Jamar Chase are two guys who were true freshmen last year, you know, played really well at times, and I think those guys have the talent to be some of the best receivers in the country. I'm really excited to see what those two guys are going to show this year.
And it wouldn't be an SEC Media Days in LSU if someone didn't bring up the Crimson Menace from Tuscaloosa. And Joe Burrow was asked about Alabama. Remember last year LSU had a tremendous season. Alabama kind of punched him in the mouth in Tiger Stadium. Joe Burrow talked about Bama.
You know, obviously last year was not very fun playing at Alabama. They kicked our butts. But I think if you go into a year saying we're going to focus on this team, we're going to beat this team, you kind of handcuff yourself in every other game. And I think if we go into the season thinking we're going to dominate every team in front of us, then that's the recipe for victory. And if you don't, like I said, I don't think you can focus on one team going into the year.
And you got to love what Joe Burrow said. That's what a leader says. He's setting the tone. We're not going to just focus on Bama. We're focused on the whole season. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll talk to college football's 150's Kevin Weiberg here live from SEC Media Days. Welcome back to RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row here at SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama. It's time for us to now welcome on another guest. He has a long and storied career in college football. He's a former deputy commissioner for the Big Ten Conference. He's the former Big 12 commissioner for nearly a decade. He also helped launch the Big Ten Network, and he also served as deputy commissioner for the Pac-12. He's now the executive director of College Football 150th Anniversary, College Football 150. It's our privilege to welcome to the program Kevin Weiberg. Kevin, how are you doing this morning?
Real good, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Well, we appreciate you making the time for us to talk to us. So let's begin right off the bat. What exactly is the statement, the mission statement, the mantra, so to speak, of College Football 150? What is its intention, and what are you guys hoping to accomplish?
So as the conferences in the NCAA knew that this anniversary was approaching a couple of years ago, they decided to form a not-for-profit entity to kind of plan and organize it, and reached out to me. I was kind of in a semi-retirement mode and sounded like a fun thing to do. So we actually established an office in August of 2017 in Dallas at the National Football Foundation offices. And the goals are pretty simple. We wanted to make sure the anniversary season, 2019, was widely recognized as this significant milestone, 150 years of college football. Also wanted to use this platform as a way to remind fans and stakeholders about the significant attributes of the sport, in addition to its history and traditions, and we've really put a lot of focus in those areas.
We're talking with Kevin Weiberg, Executive Director of College Football 150, here on RP3 and Company, broadcasting live from Radio Row of SEC Media Days. Kevin, what are some of the efforts and the game plan that you guys have in place starting now during the Media Day season, throughout the season, to continue putting a spotlight on college football and its 150th anniversary?
Right, so we've really worked hard with stakeholder organizations like the American Football Coaches Association, the Football Bowl Association, a number of others, to make sure that everybody's investing in promoting the anniversary, telling some of their own stories through the anniversary format. In week one of the season, the coaches will wear a joint AFCA 150 patch, so okay, fans will see that broadly. We've also rolled out a uniform patch that will be worn by teams throughout most of the 2019 season. So you'll see a 150 logo on the jerseys, and I think it's a voluntary program, but I'm pleased to say that I think we're up to well over two-thirds of the FBS teams that have indicated they'll wear it season-long through the regular season. Some are doing it select games, but we're very pleased about that. We've also built out promotional assets for schools that exist at our website, cfb150.org. So marketing directors can go there. They can download promotional files. They can customize them for their own school logos and colors. Just another way to sort of extend the reach of the anniversary. And then we're targeting select points during the regular season, some during the opening of the season, especially the neutral site games,
okay,
where we'll do some things in stadium with host bowl games that are hosting neutral sites, including Florida versus Miami in August 24 in Orlando is one of those games. And then the college football birthday is November 6th. And so that week, that's a midweek, but games that border that particular date will be significant to us as well. And then, of course, the postseason.
Yep. Kevin, is the actual anniversary week is in November. Not only you guys are going to be doing something special for the Miami of Ohio game on November 6th, but then there's also going to be the Princeton versus Dartmouth game held in Yankee Stadium on November 9th. And then you guys are also going to go all the way up to the NFL. You're going to be having something with the Monday Night Football game between the Cowboys and the Giants.
Right. The NFL has been great in extending support for this effort. It's actually the NFL centennial season as well. So they've extended an opportunity to promote college football's 150. And that Monday Night Football game in the Meadowlands between the Cowboys and the Giants is where they'll put a special focus on kind of a thank you college football message. So we're delighted to have their support as well.
We're talking with Kevin Weiberg, Executive Director of College Football 150, nonprofit corporation formed to plan and administer a national celebration of the sport's anniversary. Kevin, the game is I think, changed a little bit since that first game that was played back in 1869 between Princeton and Rutgers, which ended 6-4. That's more of a baseball score nowadays. But in all seriousness, with your roles in multiple conferences, Pac-12, Big Ten, and, of course, your lead role as the commissioner of the Big 12, what's some of the things that you've seen that have grown the sport and that are some of the big positives that you've seen over the course of the last 20 to 30 years, and some of the things that you still believe are challenges?
Yeah. Well, the sport continues to be extremely popular. There's no question that the increase in media coverage around the sport, especially as cable television began to balloon in the late 1970s and through that next 30-year period, have led to tremendous exposure for the sport.
Right.
A lot of games that are televised that previously weren't seeing airtime, and even digital media now, I think, promises to continue to make available to fans a lot of stuff that perhaps heretofore wasn't available. If you go back, obviously, into the early history of college football, that kind of exposure was pretty much limited to radio exposure, and we still got a lot of that, which is great, too.
And it's great for us as well.
Yeah. So I think those trend lines are going to continue to be strong. We'll have to see how they evolve. Certainly the money around the sport has increased tremendously, even in the time I've worked in it over a 40-year period. The amount that conferences are distributing to their members, there's probably a greater gap that exists between schools, especially the top 60 or so programs and the rest of Division I than there was previously. That's a challenge, but it also, I think, has shown the tremendous value that media companies place on these games and their potential value even going forward. And there's a lot of issues that have been there really from the start of the sport about the safety of players. Challenges in those areas will continue. There's a lot of focus on that now. I think also whether the athlete gets a fair deal in the present structure is a key issue. And I know there's an NCAA working group looking at some of those issues now. So the thing that I've noticed about this effort and reflecting back on the history of college football is the game has continued to evolve over time. I think it will into the future. Its popularity, I believe, will continue to be there because it really is in many respects woven into the fabric of American culture and has such great regional and local support.
We're talking with Kevin Weiberg, Executive Director of College Football 150, here live on Radio Row at SEC Media Days in Hoover. Kevin, in your experience serving as Deputy Commissioner and also Commissioner for multiple conferences, my bigger question to you is, there's been a lot of talk about the college football playoff. As a man who has helped lead conferences, plural, how do you think the college football playoff has started off, and do you think there needs to be room for expansion?
I think it's accomplished what it set out to accomplish in terms of making the national championship game one that was more widely accepted as the right matchup.
Right.
If you'll remember back in the Bowl Championship Series days, there were years where it worked well. There were many years where it was very controversial whether the matchup was the right one. So this attempt, I think, to bring a limited number of additional play-in games into the postseason has by and large been very successful. There's obviously going to be continued talk about whether or not expansion is needed. As long as not all conferences, I think, have access to the playoff structure, it's going to be an ongoing issue. I don't see any organized effort at the moment to try to expand the format,
right,
but there'll be opportunities here in the next 6 or 7 years for it to be evaluated. And ultimately, this is all going to mix in, I think, to the issues around these next round of media contracts, how valuable they are, and this postseason discussion will be part of that.
Kevin, people down south and across the country are immensely passionate about college football. I know in our neck of the woods, we're right there in the same city with the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, Raging Cajuns, and they're trying to do some different things to make the game day experience more wide open, more fun. It offers a lot more than just the standard, hey, come to the game. Because attendance has been an issue across the board over the last couple of years. Technology is part of that and everything like that. But I see a lot of programs, athletic departments, be aggressive in trying to come up with a different way of approaching to getting people to come and experience a game day atmosphere, which is nothing like anything else that you'll experience. As someone in your role with this and not only your past experience with all of your time spent as a commissioner, how important is it to continue to adapt and to continue to evolve in making the game day experience great for all of the schools of the conference?
It's really important because the community building aspect of the sport has been one of its attributes for a long, long time. And one of the reasons that universities invest in this program through facilities and other things, it's his ability to bring people to the campus, to the community at large, to create a statewide and regional following. So I think it's a very important piece. It's also obviously important from a revenue standpoint for athletic departments. And I think it will be a continued focus. You know, back in the 1950s, 60s, even into the early part, 70s and 80s, there was a lot of concern that as television grew and more games were televised, it would undercut attendance, and that, by and large, proved not to be the case. In fact, you could probably make the argument that it helped to boon interest and ultimately led to strong attendance, greater attendance, especially at marquee programs. I think the question with digital media, as people begin to consume media in a different way, is whether it has the potential to undercut those pieces. And that's why I think you're seeing this effort and investment to make stadiums more friendly for use of mobile phones, to try to bring some of the experience people would get in their home into the stadium in some way, shape, or form. So it will be a very important focus of this next decade.
Kevin, appreciate the time that you're making out for us and continue the great efforts with College Football 150. And enjoy the rest of SEC Media Days. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you. It should be a fun year. Appreciate it.
That's Kevin Weiberg, Executive Director of College Football 150, joining us here on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. We got to hit a break, but you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row here for SEC Media Days. And it's brought to you by the pros at ARCO Equipment. When the only road is no road, it is ARCO Equipment. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, raised some eyebrows yesterday with his State of the Union address. He threw in his trademark comical moments here and there. But the thing that caused people to definitely pay attention, to have their heads turn on a swivel, so to speak, was when he made the announcement of where SEC Media Days is going. Now, he led things off with a joke that they were going to Vegas, and of course that kind of got a chuckle. But then he made the announcement for where they would be going for 2020 and then where they'll be going for 2021. And neither one are here in Northern Alabama.
I know there's interest in where we conduct Media Days next year. So I'm pleased to announce that will be in Las Vegas. Oh, I'm kidding. That's where our new bowl game is. Just wanted to make sure people are paying attention. I think some of you may need massages after I watch your necks snap up. We are happy to have the Las Vegas Bowl in our inventory beginning in 2020. Next year, after the success in Atlanta last year, we will return to Atlanta for Football Media Days. We will use the Chick-fil-A College Football Hall of Fame once again as our base. Media Days will stay on the move in 2021, and we will go to the Music City and enjoy the new Grand Hyatt Nashville for Media Days. We appreciate the hospitality here in Hoover and at the Winfrey this week, and we look forward to the new opportunities in the future.
So that caught people off guard. SEC Media Days began in 1985, and it's always taken place here in the Birmingham-Hoover area, okay, with the exception of last year. 2018, it went to the College Football Hall of Fame there in Atlanta. But now they're back here at the Hyatt Regency this year in Hoover. Not surprised that it went, that it's going back to Atlanta because of the College Football Hall of Fame, and that's, you know, right there in the footprint of the SEC. And Nashville is the footprint of the SEC as well because that's the hometown of Vanderbilt. But this very much feels like SEC Media Days is going to be what the NFL is doing with the draft, that it's going to become a traveling show. It's going to become a traveling event for the conference. I think they see some inspiration on what the NFL has done on their end with the draft, where they've decided to take an event that was held in New York for generations and then says, hey, we're going to take it out of here, and we'll see what we can do with it. And they've taken it to Philly, and they've taken it to Chicago. And they had the biggest year yet earlier this year when they took it to Nashville. I think you're going to start seeing the SEC treat its Media Day event like that. You take it to Atlanta, you pair it up with the College Football Hall of Fame. And you take it to Nashville in 2 years, you can do multiple things there. Maybe even have part of it outside in a covered area. There's no telling what they'll want to do, but it just feels that way. And I don't think it's going to leave Hoover/Birmingham for good. I just think it's going to be part of a rotation. Think of it more like in golf terms, like a U.S. Open or the Open Championship, which is this weekend over in Great Britain. It's a rotational thing. And I think you could see Nashville Atlanta, New Orleans, Hoover, Birmingham. Those will be your sites that will be in the mix, so to speak, to host SEC Media Days, because it is such a tremendous event. And other conferences have looked at what the SEC has done with Media Days and creating such a humongous event that has all these members of the media coming in for it. Look at the Big 12. Big 12 started their Media Day yesterday at Jerry World in Arlington, okay, on the field where the Cowboys play, okay? Everyone's trying to do that. Everyone's trying to step up their game, so to speak, with their Media Day presentation. Now, no one does it quite as big as the SEC does. No one has it over the course of 4 days like the SEC does. But that definitely caught people off guard. Not the Atlanta one. I think people heard possibly that it would be going back to Atlanta. I don't think that's what caught people off guard. I think what people caught off guard is that last year, for the first time in its history, it left Northern Alabama. It's back in Northern Alabama this year, and now it's set for the next 2 years not to be here. I think that's what caught people off guard yesterday. Sankey also touched on a slew of other things. Conference realignment, gambling, mental health. But he did talk about Florida-Miami opening up the season very early in week zero and what that does for the conference having one of its premier programs kick off college football season.
Mike, you identified it was part of the effort to increase the focus around the 150th anniversary celebration. Okay. In the state of Florida, it'll be great focus on those two great universities. I obviously have a rooting interest. I look forward to being in Florida. What's interesting is I think it's great. From a standpoint of being able to feature on almost a standalone Saturday, I think there are a handful of other games, a great matchup, an in-state matchup like Florida and the University of Miami. We did go through this process and looking at starting even earlier. We had a working group at the NCAA level look at that and suggest not starting on what's commonly known as week zero. So it's unique, but I think it's a tribute to the game we're talking about and the opportunity to begin with a feature matchup, the 150th anniversary, the 150th season of college football.
That's Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner. That's going to do it for hour number one. Hour number two coming up here for RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, live from SEC Media Days.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning.
You know, it's my job to do my job as best I can, but to be a good teammate. You know, I've always been great in the quarterback room, helping everybody out.
Former LSU and Saints star wide receiver Devery Henderson.
To get that opportunity, man, and get that call on draft day, seeing that 504 number, it was something else, man. When I got that call, man, it was real humbling, and being able to play for Maine State and be still close to home.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Joe was wearing 9 so good, I just had to switch numbers. Nah, I'm just playing. But it's definitely a blessing, man. Definitely a blessing for the coaching staff to, you know, choose me and Coach Joe to uphold that tradition of being number 7. Just the guys that won it before me, it definitely speaks for itself. So I don't have to really talk a lot about that, but just let my play do the talking. And, I got to uphold that tradition, and I'm excited for it.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here on Rodeo Row. Just a reminder, our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row and the exclusive content that's available on 103.7thegame.com, including stories and videos, is proudly presented by the pros at ARCO Equipment. You can give us a call if you'd like. ARCO Equipment Hotline is open, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Cody Shoots will be more than happy to take your phone call. We let off today's show talking, obviously, all things LSU. They were the stars of day one of SEC Media Days. They took the stage. They were the final team yesterday afternoon. We let off hour number one talking about Coach O and how he once again, as we expected him to do, talking about blocking out the noise. That was the mindset they had last year, blocking out the noise when everything was negative. It's the same mindset, that same mantra that the Tigers are going to have this year when there's all this positive news surrounding the program and all this hype surrounding the program here at SEC Media Days. We also talked a little bit about what Joe Burrow had to say entering his second year as the starting quarterback for the Tigers. He's confident. He also prefers Louisiana food. So that's a big plus as well. And we also touched on what SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey had to say in his State of the Union address to lead off SEC Media Days and the surprising announcement that SEC Media Days is leaving Northern Alabama. Not going to be in Hoover, not going to be in Birmingham next year or the year after. Going to be in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame again as it was last year in 2020. And then in 2021, it's headed to Nashville. Going to be in the Music City. So that turns some heads, so to speak, on the fact that it could be leaving here. Now, do I think that it's going to be a permanent situation? No. I think what the SEC is going to do, they're going to make it a rotational kind of thing where it's a rotational kind of site. So it'll be in Atlanta 1 year. It'll be in Nashville 1 year. It'll be in Hoover, Birmingham the next, maybe even New Orleans. That's where I think they're going to be sending this. They're going to look at it as what the NFL does with the draft and try to emulate that and make it even a bigger event than it already is. But we'd like to hear from you. Like I said, you can call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Give us your thoughts about the SEC Media Days moving out of Hoover, Birmingham. You can also go to 1037thegame.com on our homepage. Our poll question that we just put up a few moments ago, our new poll question, should SEC Media Days leave the Hoover, Birmingham area, or should it remain? Very simple, straightforward question, so make sure to go vote on that. It's at 1037thegame.com. But I want to talk a little bit, starting off hour number two, about Grant Delpit. This time last year, just like we didn't know Joe Burrow was coming to LSU and what kind of impact he would have on the offense and on the team, Grant Delpit was under the radar. All the focus last summer and heading into fall camp was about Greedy Williams, the All-American corner, and it was about Devin White. It was about would Christian Fulton be reinstated, which he ended up doing after having his appeal initially denied, and then they went through a second time and got it. He won his appeal. Hell, there was even more buzz about John Battle. And yet Grant Delpit is the one that just blossomed and flourished last year, becoming only the ninth unanimous All-American in LSU history and the first to do so since Mo Claiborne almost a decade earlier. Delpit is one of the most buzzed about players here this entire week. He's one of the most buzzed about players in the entire SEC. Okay? He's that good. And you heard him talking about wearing number 7. That was a decision that was made in spring ball, that he's going to rock the number 7, a number that's been worn by the likes of Leonard Fournette, Tyrann Mathieu, and Patrick Peterson there at LSU. Delpit talked about a slew of different things during the Media Day session yesterday. He talked about if this group of defensive backs, himself, Christian Fulton, Derek Stingley Jr., and others, are they the best in the nation?
I'd say best in the nation. That's got to be our mindset. You know, we can't have the mindset that any receiver is better than us, any receiving corps is better than us, or we're going to go out there and get beat. So that's just how it is playing the SEC. And that's just the tradition of LSU DBs, man. You know, we've had the best. We have the best traditionally. You know, we got to uphold that at all means.
I love the confidence. I love the confidence. It's not cockiness, Grant Delpit. I noticed that last year covering him and talking to him. It's not. It's just a great confidence. And a lot of those guys that come through there on the back end of the defense for LSU have that same approach. And that's something that Coach Corey Raymond from New Iberia, the secondary coach, the DB coach, instills into his players. They have an immense amount of confidence, but they're not cocky. Delpit had to say what he learns and what they learned facing elite wide receivers, in particular like the ones at Alabama, who have three guys who are in the top 9 or 10 wide receivers in the conference. What does that do for him and his fellow DBs?
You know, we love going against good receivers because that just shows the best on the best. I think we have the best DBs in the nation. I think a lot of other people vouch for that. So just going against those guys, they're great athletes. But we also have great receivers too. You know, we go against them every day in practice. That's not a thing a lot of people are talking about. But you know, that'll definitely get us prepared for them.
I love what he said there. It gets us prepared, and that means multiple levels, right? It means not only for the college football season, but for a lot of these guys, if you play defensive back at LSU, more than likely you're going to be drafted, right? You just look at the numbers. There's a reason why LSU carries itself as DBU, because of the amount of guys they produce that go on to the NFL, okay? Patrick Peterson, Tyron Matthew, Mo Claiborne, okay? Tre'Davious White, Jamal Adams. The list goes on and on and on. Dante Jackson, okay, year in, year out, they produce guys that go to the next level. He was also asked about, you know, what game that he was looking forward to the most, and he said the next one. And he elaborated a little bit on that, and it stems from that embarrassing loss at home inside Tiger Stadium to Troy 2 years ago, and what that taught not only him, but the rest of the team when it comes to facing an opponent.
No, I say we can't take any team for granted. We dropped a game 2 years ago with Troy. That just taught us our lesson, overlooking teams. So, you know, we definitely can't do that. But we worry about Georgia Southern, and then we got Texas after that. Then we got the next team after that. So we're not too worried about that team right now.
It's a cliche. We're going to take it 1 week at a time. We're going to take it one game at a time, right? That's a lot of coach speak. And a lot of times you hear that from players, too, that just kind of repeat the coach speak. But if there is a silver lining about what occurred 2 seasons ago against Troy, I think that's that. I think that was a turning point for Coach O. I think that was a turning point for his staff. And I think it was a turning point for the players where they're like, you know what? We have to make sure we come every week and deliver the goods. And we have to prepare every week as if we're playing a championship game. And I think that's why you've seen this program start to ascend and make a turn. And I think that Troy loss, I think we're going to look back at that Troy loss, and we're going to see that as the turning point for Coach O and for this program. And Delpit kind of gave us a little bit of a peek into that window, so to speak, there. He also talked about Texas A&M. The 7 overtime game last year, historic. LSU ended up being on the losing end of it. Then there was multiple scuffles afterwards involving coaches and volunteer coaches and Jimbo Fisher's nephew and so forth and so forth. When asked if Texas A&M, if that's a rivalry, well, this is what number 7 had to say.
I don't know about a rivalry, but I think they're coming in as a bigger competitor. You know, Coach Jimbo is doing a good job over there. He's turning that program around. You know, I have some friends on that team, you know, Kellen and Jamon and Courtney and those guys. So, you know, they're doing a good job over there. We got them at home this year, so, you know, we'll be ready for that game.
I love the fact that he gave them respect, but on the same hand, he also kind of gave them a little disrespect where he didn't say that they were a rival. You got to love that. I mean, you got to love that. And when he said it yesterday, on the second floor here at the Hyatt Regency, he said it with a pretty big smirk on his face, too, where it was like, maybe they want us to be, maybe they want this to be a rivalry game. But, kind of it didn't really commit to it, which I just kind of love. LSU's defense is going to be missing some big pieces. You know, John Battle graduated. He's gone. Greedy Williams declared early for the draft. He's gone. And then, of course, the first Dit Butkus Award winner in LSU history, the All-American linebacker, Devin White, is gone. And this is what Delpit had to say about Devin White.
We just got to reload. Devin was the most vocal person I've ever been around, and the best linebacker I've ever played with. And that's saying a lot because I played with Dylan Moses in high school. But I think Devin is just an all-around great linebacker, great leader. So just learn from him, just being a more vocal leader, and also let my player do the talking. So just learn from him.
I like that. He said learn from him, learn how to be a more vocal leader. I think you're going to see that from Delpit. I think that's why he got number 7. You know, look, he was only the 9th consensus All-American in LSU history. His play on the field speaks volumes, whether is in the first series getting an interception against Auburn and Ole Miss last year, or not biting on that fake field goal attempt against Georgia where they ended up stomping on the Bulldogs. This is a smart player. This is an instinctive player, and this is one of the best damn football players in the country. He is probably, along with Tua from Alabama, the 2 best players in the conference. Okay? He's that good. But I love the fact that he's still learning and that he has the confidence, but he's not cocky about it. And Grant Delpit is legit, and he deserves to wear number 7. And there's a big responsibility that comes with wearing number 7 there for the Tigers. Some guys, as we know, have not been able to handle it. We saw that last year. So Delpit has it this year. He's more than capable of being able to handle wearing number 7. If you want to know more about Grant Delpit, the star safety leader of the Tigers defense, make sure to go to 1037thegame.com. That's part of our SEC Media Days coverage. We have a story up there on the blogs about Delpit embracing the lofty expectations that are being placed on him by his coach and by the media and by everyone else. And he's fully embracing it. So you can read all about Grant Delpit and more from SEC Media Days coverage there on 1037thegame.com. And that's proudly presented by the pros at Artco Equipment. We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days. Welcome back to the show. We're broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here on Radio Row in lovely Hoover, Alabama. We talked a little bit about LSU star safety Grant Delpit in the last segment and how he's embracing those lofty expectations placed upon him. Another gentleman that was here for LSU, obviously it was Coach Edo, Joe Burrow, and Grant Delpit. But the one that was kind of the unexpected addition, the third guy that they brought along, was Lloyd Cushenberry. Now, I find this interesting for a couple of reasons. Lloyd is their best offensive lineman, for sure. That goes without question. But the offensive line had its struggles. Now, part of that in 2018 was due to some injuries. They had to move some guys around. They weren't exactly the healthiest bunch across the line as the season progressed. But if LSU is going to take that next step, if the Tigers are going to compete with the likes of the Crimson Tide and possibly win the Southeastern Conference and be in the college football playoff mix and try to win a national championship, the offensive line is going to have to do a better job of pass protecting. Last year, Joe Burrow was roughed up. He was beat up week in and week out. And I'm not just talking about by the likes of Alabama here. I'm talking he got roughed up by Florida. He got roughed up by Southeastern Louisiana. He got roughed up by Louisiana Tech. Okay? They had a terrible time in particular of pass protection. They did a far better job of run blocking, but when it came to protecting Joe Burrow and keeping him clean and keeping him upright, they struggled. And the offense struggled for stretches because of that. There were stretches in games that they were very pedestrian. So I found it interesting that Coach O decided to bring Lloyd Cushenberry along with him. He's a good player, a good team leader, a good guy in the locker room. That's probably also why they brought him. But also, you know, hey, this is an opportunity for him to spend some extra time with Lloyd and say, hey, look, you guys got to step up. Because if you remember, after the Alabama game, Coach O talked about how they needed to get more physical and they needed to do a better job across both the offensive line and the defensive line, and that they needed to recruit better, that they needed bigger guys that were more physical and just nasty guys across the offensive line because they got pushed around by Alabama. This is what Lloyd Cushenberry had to say yesterday during the opening day of SEC Media Days about his coach calling out he and his fellow offensive linemen following that disheartening defeat at home to Alabama.
We didn't take it, you know, as anything. You know, we understood we didn't play out to our standards in the room, you know, that game. And, you know, we understood that. We still understand it, that we have to, you know, be better, and we look forward to the challenge this year.
To your left over here.
Hey, Lloyd. Nolan Thompson, WAFB. Coming off a season where you started every game, I was wondering how different is the mindset coming into this year where you kind of know where the spot is yours as opposed to last year where you're kind of fighting for that starting spot. How is it different?
Well, I try to keep the same mindset. You know, even last year I was still competing for the job. I try to keep that same mindset this year. You know, I still have a lot to prove to myself and to my teammates. You know, I just feel like I have so many more things to work on, and I feel like I just scratched the ceiling. You know, I just want to keep getting better.
That was Lloyd Cushenberry talking two things. He addressed the fact that they were not offended and that they took the criticism that Coach O gave them following the Alabama game, and that they knew that they did not play to their potential and that they were embarrassed, and that he and the rest of his offensive linemen had no problem with Coach O kind of putting them on blast after the game. He also talked about a little bit more certainty for Lloyd heading into this season. The question was asked, how does he feel about things? And he definitely feels more confident because, remember, we didn't really know where Lloyd was going to be at and what the offensive line was going to be heading into the season last year. We have a better idea of what positions are going to be, where guys are going to be lined up and playing, and so does Lloyd, which obviously makes things a far easier for you to head into the season if you know exactly where you're going to be lining up at. Lloyd also discussed yesterday about having to step up and to be a leader. Look, this team has leaders. Joe Burrow has proven that he is the leader of this team on the offensive side. We know Grant Delpit's going to lead on the defense. Rashad Lawrence is going to lead on the defense. They got plenty of leaders, but you need some guy on the offensive line. There's always going to be the one cat, the big fella on the offensive line, that's going to be a vocal leader, that's going to step up and not only keep his O-line in check, but maybe bark some orders at the running back for not hitting his hole properly or get on the quarterback for not getting the ball out in time. You need that guy across the offensive line. You need that the big fella. And he talked about trying to be more of a vocal leader for the team.
In the past, I've always tried to be a lead-by-example guy. I always just wanted to work and just hope that other guys would follow. But, you know, as of recent, you know, I've tried to be more of a vocal leader, not just only in the offensive line room because I'm comfortable with that, but just being more of a vocal leader for the team, you know, having that confidence, you know, having a year under my belt and you know, the guys knowing, you know, the work that I put in, I have that confidence that I can speak up more often and just trying to do that more, so being vocal towards the team.
That's Lloyd Cushenberry, one of the three LSU players that came to SEC Media yesterday. Definitely impressed by him. Ownership wants to be more of a vocal leader and wants to help lead this team to even bigger heights in 2019. But LSU weren't the only stars of the first day of SEC Media Days. When we come back, we'll talk more about that. Mizzou, Florida. They also took the stage yesterday. You're listening in to RP3 and Company here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, live from SEC Media Days. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Hoover, Alabama. That's right, our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row and the exclusive content available on 103.7thegame.com. That's stories and videos, is proudly presented by the pros at Ardco Equipment. Cody Schutz is back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And you can give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. 337-706-0111. We talked LSU heavy so far in today's show, and rightfully so. We talked about Coach O and what he had to say during his press conference yesterday, day one of SEC Media Days. We also talked Grant Delpit, Joe Burrow, and, of course, Lloyd Cushenberry. We also talked about what Greg Sankey had to say, SEC Commissioner, as he made the announcement that the SEC Media Days is going to be on the move the next 2 years. It's going to go back to Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame, where it was at last year. Last year was the first time that SEC Media Days was outside of Northern Alabama. So it's going to be returning to Atlanta next year, and then the year after that, it's going to the Music City, Nashville. You can vote on our latest poll question, should SEC Media Days be held outside of Northern Alabama? It should be held outside of Hoover / Birmingham. You can go to 1037thegame.com. It's on our homepage on the right-hand side. Vote in our latest poll question. But it just wasn't all LSU and Greg Sankey yesterday. There were other teams here, too, as well. And one of those teams was Missouri. Now, Missouri is interesting because they're dealing with some issues. They have currently, right now, they are appealing a postseason ban by the NCAA for some violations. They're trying to win that appeal, and it seems like, based on his comments yesterday, Greg Sankey is trying to help them win that appeal. They've also had some down years. They haven't been nearly as competitive as they would like to be or as they were when they first joined the SEC. But there was a lot of buzz about Mizzou yesterday here at the Hyatt Regency because of the young man they brought, their quarterback, Kelly Bryant. He's the transfer from Clemson. He began his career backing up Deshaun Watson for 2 years. We know how good Deshaun Watson is. He won a national championship, and now he's quarterbacking the Houston Texans. He backed up Deshaun Watson for 2 years. Then he became the starter, led Clemson to 12 wins, an ACC championship, and a berth in the college football playoff. Now, they lost that year to Alabama, and then 4 games into last season, he lost his job. They decided to make a change at quarterback. They went with Trevor Lawrence. The rest is history. Clemson went on to a roll, won the national championship by absolutely curb-stomping Alabama in the national championship game. So Kelly Bryant entered the transfer portal. He needed to find a new home. And Mizzou welcomed him with open arms, and that's a big reason why he's a Missouri Tiger.
Like, literally right when I transferred, we'll put myself in the portal, and then, you know, the coaches could contact me. Missouri was the first school that contacted me, just texted me, just let me know who they are, and, you know, just wanted to get on the phone with me. Man, it was a crazy process, you know. When I went out there on a visit, you know, I just pretty much fell in love with everything that, you know, they had to offer, and, you know, within that last year, you know, because the biggest thing for me, I was like, okay, you know, I have 1 year to get it right. You know, I can't have any slip-ups, and then they knew it, and then, you know, just pretty much just telling me, you know, how Drew had the success he had within a year, where he put himself in a position to be where he wanted to be, you know, this at the end of the year, and then look up his second round draft pick. I was like, okay, that's a box check for me, you know, how they can, you know, grow me into, you know, the quarterback that I want to be, being able to play at the next level. So that's been just the biggest thing, you know, that, you know, the box is just getting ready to be checked.
You talk about checking boxes. He talked about being welcomed with open arms. Missouri was the first team that reached out to him once he got into the transfer portal. he fell in love with Columbia, he fell in love with the campus and the coaching staff. He also, you know, talked about, you know, they pitched him on what they were able to do with Locke. And Locke ended up being drafted in the second round earlier this year for the Denver Broncos. So he gets to go to a team that's going to put up big numbers in that offense and possibly help him get to the NFL. Helping him get to the NFL is a man who serves as the offensive coordinator, a man who won a national championship, a BCS national championship as an assistant coach at LSU under Nick Saban, and who's also the former head coach at Louisiana Tech, the one and only Derek Dooley. This is what Kelly Bryant had to say about Coach Dooley.
Well, the pitch for me getting coming to Missouri, he saw what I did at Clemson. You know, he loved the things, what he saw, you know, from a passer standpoint and also what I can do with my legs because, you know, I can make plays with my legs, being able to extend plays. But, you know, being where he was at with the Cowboys, you know, seeing Dak and seeing Tony, you know, having that experience within the Cowboys offense, you know, bringing it to Missouri and, you know, being able to, you know, put yourself in a position where, you know, he's gonna make plays for you that where you're comfortable. You know, he's not gonna call anything where he's comfortable with, but the quarterback's not comfortable. He's gonna cater to you, and you know, just knowing that I have that in my pocket where I can go into a meeting room. I don't like this. I like this though. So let's do this, and he's gonna cater to you. So that's just been one of the biggest things that I liked about, you know, playing for him so far.
What he's learning from Derek Dooley going through spring ball. I've said it before. Missouri could be a sneaky team this year. Regardless of what happens, if they win their appeal about their postseason ban, they could be a sneaky team. They could definitely throw a monkey wrench into some other teams' plans there in the SEC East, including Florida and Georgia and Kentucky. Kelly was also asked about transitioning from playing in the ACC for Clemson to now playing in the SEC for Missouri.
As a quarterback, I don't feel like nothing's going to change for me, like mindset-wise. I'm still had the same mindset, you know, that I've had, you know, since I got to college, you know, just taking one day at a time, just, you know, not looking too far ahead, you know, just focus on, you know, what I can focus on and control, what I can control, and just being great where my feet are.
So that's the kind of answer that you'd hope he would play. I mean, look, he started for Clemson. He's won a national championship as a backup. He knows about big-time college football. So it's not going to be that much of a transition from him from going from the ACC and playing at Clemson to playing in the SEC. He did share what his reaction was because he made the decision to transfer into the transfer portal and then the NCAA, after he had already committed to Missouri, signed on the dotted line, so to speak, the NCAA made their decision about the postseason ban. And Kelly shared with the media what his initial reaction was to that news.
It was a weird day. I think I was in actually the facility. Then, like, all of a sudden, everyone was getting text messages about we having a team meeting that wasn't, like, planned or scheduled. That was like, don't go to class or don't go to tutoring. Make sure everyone's there. And so for me, I was like, somebody get fired? They ain't telling me about it. So I'm like, oh, man. And so, you know, just sitting there and just hearing Coach Odom, you know, deliver the message because, you know, he didn't have to, like, go in depth with the details about everything that had went down. You know, he just laid it out there for us. And he was like, you know, he was open, like, if anybody want to leave, you know, no one's going to look at you any differently. You know, you have the opportunity to stay here as well, but, you know, he said we're going to try to appeal it, you know, just see how it is. It's going to be a process. You know, just hearing that, I was like, first and foremost, I don't want to leave. I don't want to go through that recruiting process over again. Now I already built a relationship within that little month or two with those guys. You know, I was already, you know, establishing myself, you know, just working every day. So I was like, this is where I want to be. You know, I made the decision, so I'm not going to, you know, turn back on it now.
You got to love what you heard right there. I mean, he had the possibility of getting back into the transfer portal because of the NCAA's decision of postseason ban, and that had been one of the things that could have allowed him to say, okay, I'm not going to come here after all. I want to spend my last year of eligibility playing for a team that can go to the postseason. And he did not waver his commitment to Missouri. So that tells you about the bond that he's already developing with Coach Odom and Coach Derek Dooley there at Missouri. Once again, Kelly Bryant could be surprising some people this year with Mizzou. A surprise team last year out of the SEC was Florida. Dan Mullen's first year had a tremendous amount of success there at Mississippi State. He goes back to Florida where he served as the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator during those national championship years under Urban Meyer, where he was able to coach Tim Tebow and develop him into a Heisman Trophy winner. So they had a surprising year, 10 wins last year. They had a very good year, Florida did. They surprised a lot of people, but there was some inconsistencies for sure about Florida, the Gators. They won 10 games, but they were not a complete team by any stretch of the imagination. But Dan Mullen talked about what the Florida Gator standard is.
And the Gator standard that we talk about at the University of Florida goes beyond football, goes into all sports, where every sport on campus is expected to compete for and win championships, both SEC and national championships. And it's great. I love having our players around, all those other student athletes, all these successful athletes in other sports. And then when you leave the athletic field and you get to go to the classroom and to be a school, one of the only school in America that was ranked in the top 10 in academics and top 10 in football of public schools in America last year. And they're going out against the premier students every single day and working with and studying with and associating with and networking with and competing with some of the top students in the United States, the complete package that comes with it. And that's really what we believe the Gator standard to be, is about being the absolute best that you can be at whatever it is that you're doing. So our guys have really bought into that. I think we had a great offseason. The strides our guys took coming in, getting ready for year two, we need to take a huge step forward for us this year. You know, I think we had a lot of success last year, but our consistency of performance is something I want to see us change to perform at a high level every single game, every single week, every single play. The consistency of our performance to continue to improve. So,
that's Dan Mullen, second-year head coach there for the Florida Gators, about what the expectations are, what the standard is there in Gainesville for a program rich in history. If Florida is going to take the next step, if they're going to beat Georgia, if they're going to win the SEC East and compete for a college football playoff spot, Felipe Franks is going to have to be more consistent. He's going to have to play better. He made strides last year under the tutelage of Dan Mullen, but he's going to have to continue to improve. And Dan Mullen talked about what has assisted Felipe in his development as a quarterback.
Well, I think as the year went on, I think he understood what his abilities were, and he decided to use all of his talents. You know, I think a light came on that I'm 6'6", 245 pounds, and pretty athletic. And if they're going to just completely empty the middle of the field and I can run into the end zone from 20 yards away untouched, that I could do that. And I think when he bought into using all of his skill set to play and not trying to limit himself or not trying to worry really about what everybody else thought, he was going to be a better player, and he did that. I think he started to block out all the outside noise, all the other opinions. I told him, if you know of all these other opinions that are out there of how to play the quarterback position, if there's someone better than Brian Johnson, let me know. I'll hire them to be our quarterback coach. But I think he's a pretty darn good quarterback coach. I have some pretty good experience developing quarterbacks as well. Felipe, if you think everybody on Twitter is much better at that to coach, just let us know. We'll look at them as being the quarterback coach. So,
Dan Mullen told his quarterback, well, if you think the guys on Twitter can coach you better, that's great. Felipe Franks was here too, and he pretty much took ownership as well. So, it'd be interesting to see if Florida can continue to develop. You know, obviously Dan Mullen made a huge impact last year in year one, but can he build off of that? I don't know if the talent level there on the roster is comparable to Georgia, who I think may have the best talent in the entire conference this coming season, or the likes of LSU and Alabama, and maybe even A&M, but it is improving. And Dan Mullen does know how to recruit, and he does know how to develop quarterbacks. We've seen it. So we'll see if the Gators can improve, and we'll see if Kelly Bryant can turn around the Missouri Tigers. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we will wrap up hour number two here on RP3 and Company with some Houston Astros baseball talk right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game as we broadcast live from SEC Media Days. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days Radio Row here in Hoover, Alabama. We spent the better part of today's show talking all things SEC Media Days, as expected. LSU took the stage yesterday. We also talked about Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, and the other teams, Missouri and Florida. But, you know, we could take some time out here to talk a little Major League Baseball because we are Acadiana's home for Houston Astros. Stros fall last night, 9-6. I fell asleep. They were winning. I wake up. They did not. They lost. The Stros got out early. Scored a run in the first, two in the second. Had a 3-0 lead heading into the bottom of the third. And then the Angels score a run in the third, two in the fourth, and then they just score four in the fifth. And that'd be pretty much all she wrote there. Angels scored 9 runs on 10 hits. The Stros also committed 2 errors. Josh James got the start for the Stros. And, you know, we knew that was going to happen because of Peacock's injury. He had some soreness, so he was shelved right at the last minute. We talked about that on yesterday's show, that they had to take Peacock out of the rotation. He was supposed to start on Monday, so they were going to do pretty much piece it together with relievers. And that's what they did. Josh James got the start. He only pitched an inning, but he struck out one, didn't give up a hit. And then Framber Valdez, who has struggled mightily for the Stros of late, he was not good. He pitched 4 innings. He gave up 4 earned runs on 6 hits. He walked 4, and that's pretty much where the game went kind of sideways on the Stros. Joe Smith ended up pitching a fairly clean inning, only giving up 1 hit after that, and then Colin McHugh came in, gave up 3 hits and 1 run, but did strike out 2 in 2 innings of work. But Framber Valdez was not good last night there in Anaheim. Springer had himself a heck of a game. He's still returning to form. He's showing, he looks to me to be probably around 85 to 90% now. He went 3-for-5 last night, scored 3 runs, drove in 3 runs as well. Altuve went hitless though, 0-for-4. He had been, he'd been kind of coming back into his own. So a rare off night for him. Bregman was 1-for-4, scored a run as well. Gurriel just having a terrific season, under the radar kind of season, 2-for-4 as well. And Tony Kemp came up big, 2-for-5. But the Stros drop now to 59-36. They still have a comfortable lead in the American League West, obviously. But disappointing start to a stand, and they just salvaged a split to start off the second half of the season with that 4-game series at the Texas Rangers. They dropped the first two. They had to go to extra innings to win the one on Saturday, and then they pulled away with the easy victory on Sunday. But then the second stop on this road trip starts off with yet another loss. Stros will be back on tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game Astro launch will be at 8:35. First pitch, 9:07, Stros at Angels. So make sure to stay tuned for that. Coming up next, we'll start off hour number 3, talking to our friend Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, live from SEC Media Days.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that says New Orleans on the front of it. I mean, it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome back. Hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row. And the exclusive content available on 1037thegame.com is proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll have our good friend from TigerDetails.com, the one and only Ron Higgins, will joining us live here on Radio Row, recapping yesterday's opening day of the SEC Media Days, which involved, of course, LSU. That's what we've been talking a lot about today, obviously, LSU. Ed O, Joe Burrow, Grant Delpit, and Lloyd Cushenberry. But I want to take a little time here before we get back to the SEC Media Day talk and talk about a pair of former Tigers on the hardwood. Ben Simmons got paid. The former LSU Tiger, or rather the former basketball player who had a cup of coffee in Baton Rouge, has reportedly reached an agreement with the Philadelphia 76ers, who drafted him, and he spent, remember, his rookie year injured. They're giving him a max rookie extension worth $170 million over 5 years. Contract runs through the 2024-2025 season. And, you know, the 76ers have their core locked up. You know, they traded Jimmy Butler to the Miami Heat. They let J.J. Redick walk. He went and, of course, signed with the New Orleans Pelicans. They got Joel Embiid locked up on a long-term deal. They got Tobias Harris, who they re-signed. They traded for him from the Los Angeles Clippers last year. And they poached Al Horford away from the Boston Celtics. So they got a core piece, one of their young stars. They're giving Ben Simmons $170 million over 5 years. It is 2019, and the league is all about the three-point shot and is all about shooting three-pointers and being reliant on that. Golden State, Houston, every team in the NBA has a bevy of three-point shooters, and that's how they're built to do things. That's how you're built to win, the dependence on the three-point shot. And the 76ers are giving $170 million to a guy who's never made a three-pointer.
Money, 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 team.
Never made a three-pointer, Cody.
It's all about the money. It's all about the money.
He has never made a three-pointer.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
$170 million to a guy who's playing guard for you that's never made a three-point shot. Like, I don't understand what the 76ers are doing. They got Al Horford. They got Tobias Harris. They got Joel Embiid. They're just massive. They're just a bunch of massive dudes on the court. And the best shooter of the bunch may be Joel Embiid. And he's their seven-footer. Like, how's this team going to win? How's this team going to run up and down the court? Don't get me wrong. Ben Simmons' game, there is some good parts of it. He's a good passer. He's an okay defender. But he struggles to score the ball. People pile on Lonzo Ball all the time. Ben Simmons struggles to score, and he can't shoot the three. It is 2019 NBA, and yet this guy's getting $170 million. Good for him for getting that money. Never going to knock a guy for getting his money, plain and simple. But $170 million for a guy who can't shoot the three-point shot? I don't know.
It's all about the money. It's all about the money.
That it is. That it is, and good for Ben Simmons. He's not the only former LSU Tiger basketball player that I want to talk about, though. NBA Summer League wrapped up last night out in Vegas. Memphis wins the whole thing. They edge out the Minnesota Timberwolves 95-92. It was also the seventh and final game of the NBA Summer League for one and only Naz Reid, former LSU Tiger. He's had himself one heck of a summer league. Remember, he signed that two-way contract, went undrafted, was projected to be a lottery pick, then went during the season, then was still projected to be a late first-rounder or early second-round draft pick, went undrafted, signed the two-way deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he kind of lit up the summer league. Once again, it's the summer league in Vegas. But he played his final summer league game last night for the T-Wolves. He got the start, his seventh start in seven games, played 21 minutes, only scored 8 points, but he did get 10 rebounds, two assists, and a block. He's done a nice job during the summer league of rebounding more, 10 rebounds, 6 rebounds, 3 rebounds, another 10 rebound game. So he's obviously working on that. He still needs to work on his shooting. Last two games, 6 of 12, 3 of 13, those are not great percentages. But once again, it's summer league, he's learning his way. I fully expect to see Naz Reid probably start off the season playing for the G League team, for the T-Wolves, and then working his way up onto the big roster as a bench player. He has potential. He has potential. He can do some good things. He just needs to continue to develop as a shooter and continue to be aggressive and learn and gain more confidence playing within his own body. That's something that he struggled with early on, but he's gotten better as the season progressed. He got better. He became more of a all-around player, a little bit more dominant. So we'll see. We'll see if Naz Reid can take this summer league experience and build some momentum into camp and then make it to the big roster. We got to hit a break. But you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, live from SEC Media Days in Hoover. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days Radio Row here at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Hoover. And we're joined now here on Radio Row by a man who's been to every single SEC Media Day since 1985. He's one of the best in the business, the award-winning sports journalist extraordinaire, and our good friend of the program, the one and only Ron Higgins. Ron, good morning to you, brother.
Good morning.
How's it feel to have once again started off another SEC Media Days?
It always feels like I survived another year in the business, I guess. You know, you try to see how long this run will last. It's been a really good run. I've been able to work at some really good places and really cover the entire SEC, not just LSU, because when I worked in Memphis for all those years, I covered the whole league, not just one or two teams. So, and I really enjoyed that because I got to know the whole league inside and out, and gave me appreciation for the conference and how good it is overall in almost every sport, and why the SEC works when a lot of other conferences don't.
We're talking with Ron Higgins here live on Radio Row from SEC Media Days. Ron, I want to talk a little bit about Commissioner Greg Sankey. He had a little fun yesterday. He had jokes, as we like to say, throughout his State of the Union address. But one of the things that turned people's heads was his announcement jokingly saying that SEC Media Days was going to Vegas, but then he said it was going to go back to Atlanta next year, and then the year after it's going to Nashville. Your thoughts on the SEC Media Days going back-to-back years outside of Northern Alabama?
Well, you know, one of the things I think they do is they kind of reward cities where they already have an event. You know, in Atlanta, they have the football championship game. They've had it every year since 1992 there. So they kind of – let's give Atlanta an event in the, you know, in the summer as well as the end of football season. And, you know, in Nashville, they have the men's basketball there almost every year now. And they have the Music City Bowl. let's give Nashville something, another SEC event there, because they prove themselves. I think they kind of reward cities that have kind of proven themselves as hosts, I don't think it'll ever happen in New Orleans, because they'll be scared as hell that nobody will show up the next morning from coming off of Bourbon Street. Honest to God. I mean, really, I'm, they probably think, God, we have a coach on at 9 o'clock, and there'll be like three people there, you know? it would be awesome in New Orleans.
It would be awesome.
Any event in New Orleans is awesome, always. Best city in the world to have events. But I think they're scared to have it there, because they really don't know it might be there the next morning. But yeah, they're moving around, but they generally like to stay in places where they already have an event, you know, and they like it here in Hoover because they already have the baseball tournament here, and that will never move. I mean, they always put it up for bid every 4 or 5 years, and kind of hold Hoover for ransom, and they do some improvements on the stadium or parking, and then they give them another contract. Kind of like the SEC works.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Ron, let's go back to yesterday as well. One more thing about Sankey. He talked about a lot of things. I found it interesting. He kind of merged gambling and mental health together during his State of the Union address. He also touched on targeting. That was brought up. Obviously, the Devin White hit was brought up to him about targeting. What did you think of Commissioner Sankey's State of the Union address as a whole?
Well, I think he kind of touched on a lot of different things, kind of wandered all over the place. The targeting thing, I know he's not big on having the guy suspended for, an entire half or a game. I think he would like to see the suspension removed. And he talked about that in Destin a while back. He understands that you have to have a targeting rule, but he also understands that maybe the penalty's a bit harsh.
Okay.
I know LSU fans will say, well, now he thinks that. After Devin White stuff, now he thinks that. James Carville must have got to him. I think they're trying to figure out the gambling dynamic and how it can incorporate into college football. Because I know Scott Weber, you know, he wants gambling in Louisiana and because he feels it can help college athletics create more interest and maybe more revenue somehow. If he can figure a way to get some of the tie-in of it. But Louisiana's not there yet. Mississippi is. And Mississippi makes a killing on football Saturdays and fall, man. They really do. And football Saturdays and Sundays, Mississippi casinos just kill it. And Louisiana's a bit behind that. I think they'll eventually catch up. They want to make sure, I guess, the league and NCAA in general wants to make sure that, you know, you don't get to the point where, you know, the gambling affects the point shaving and stuff like that, which, I mean, you go back to the, I guess, 1980s in Tulane with their point shaving in basketball. They killed the program out for a few years. Yeah.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Ron, let's talk about LSU. Coach O, as expected, you and I kind of talked about this last week. It was going to be all about blocking out the noise, and he did not hesitate, did not take him long in his opening remarks to get right to that point where, yeah, we had all the negativity that we dealt with last year. We blocked out the noise. Well, we're going to take the same approach this year with when everyone is praising us, and Paul Feinbaum is talking about us. You're going to be a contender to beat Alabama this year and be in the mix. There's a lot of positivity, but they're taking the same mindset. You feel that that's probably the best approach for Coach O and his staff, especially how they were able to succeed last year with that same approach?
Yeah, you kind of stick with what works for you, you know, I mean, and be consistent about it. You know, you talk to the players about Ed Orgeron, that they talk about the consistency, the day-to-day consistency with him. And I think that's a really, really good consistent approach. You know, generally when LSU has been picked high to play well, they really haven't. I mean, if you look, golly, going back to probably post, you know, 2011 season when the LSU's been picked high. I mean, they haven't played well at all. You know, they certainly hadn't come close to expectations. I like Ed's approach. I like the fact, you know, I mean, you don't like to see LSU lose games. But usually when LSU loses a game, they come back and play pretty well the next week, and I think that's a credit to kind of Ed. putting bad stuff behind him. And I think he prepares him mentally pretty good. And I like the approach to block out the noise. That's the way you've got to be. And it's hard because of social media. You got guys who like to, some players like to be on social media, and some understand that, you know, it's poison for you during the season. But I think they do a pretty good job of blocking out the noise. And I think it's a really good approach. Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. He did not hesitate to praise Grant Delpit, said that he was the best returning defender in the country. That didn't surprise me, nor did it surprise me, Ron, that Grant Delpit, when asked about it, he said, sure. Like, it didn't faze him, and he wasn't cocky about it. And there's just a confidence with a lot of those guys that come under the tutelage of Corey Raymond. A lot of those guys are immensely confident. But we go back a year, Ron, we weren't talking about Grant Delpit. We just weren't. We were talking about Greedy Williams. We were talking about, is Christian Fulton going to come back? Hell, we were probably talking more about John Battle. And Grant Delpit came out of nowhere and becomes only the 9th unanimous All-American in LSU football history. Has he scratched the surface on just how good he can be?
No, he's getting there. Last year, you know, because of Greedy's reputation, people just kind of went away from him. And that left, and that really left somebody else to make plays. And Grant made plays, and they like Grant because they can move him all over the field. That's why Aranda loves him. He can put him like almost anywhere on the field, and understand that he's going to be pretty good. But yeah, I think he's a scratch the surface, and when you look at him, you can't believe he's a safety because he's so big. I mean, he's tall and rangy and just really, you know, you wouldn't think he's a safety.
No.
You know, I mean, makes Jamal Adams look small. I mean, and just you got an athlete like that who can cover ground so fast and long and, you know, good ball skills, you know, good quick twitch, good recovery. He's got everything you need. And, it's going to be fun watching trying to LSU secondary because they got lockdown corners, and then you got to try to deal with Grant Delpit and other people. And I he was confident yesterday, and not in a cocky way. The same way with Joe Burrow, who was absolutely hilarious yesterday, and really just I think surprised a lot of people who didn't know him or hadn't talked to Joe Burrow before that how intelligent and funny and smart he is, and how, you know, confident he is in what LSU's doing.
Ron, you wrote a story for TigerDetails.com talking about how charming Joe was yesterday, and he kind of held court. He seems as time has progressed now, well, he's not even a year, right? He's not even a year on campus. That'll be coming up shortly. But he seems, after every media session, he gets more and more confident, and he does. It's easy to see why the guys in that locker room like him and respect him as their quarterback, right? You can just kind of tell, just interact. Yeah. You've been doing this long enough, yeah, right? You can just kind of tell why the guys like playing for Joe.
Yeah, you know, he's what you want your quarterback to be. A guy who leads, a guy who's funny, the guy who can make fun of himself, guy who's just, they know he's tough as nails. They love the fact that he doesn't mind contact. Like Joe told me, he goes, you know, how can I expect my offensive line to do the dirty work when I don't do some of it myself? And he goes, I think of myself as a football player, not a quarterback. If I got to hit somebody, I'm going to try to hit them. I'm not so stupid. I'm running down the sideline. There's a 6'3", 250-pound linebacker waiting for me. He goes, I'll step out of bounds. He goes, but other times, you know, just, I mean, you know, you try to make the hit and take the hit. He goes, and one thing about RPOs, you know, is great because because you're in control of making the decision with the ball, nobody really ever gets really a clean shot at you. He goes, and when you run the ball in RPO, it's not like you're exposed like you are when you're you know, back there trying to throw a ball or scramble. And he goes, because I take less hits than people think because I don't mind taking the hit. He goes, yeah, I'll be going to ask Coach Ensminger to run more reverses so I can blindside a linebacker.
And that's one of the things, that grittiness, that toughness, and that willingness to get hit and to lay down a hit, I think is one over that locker room almost probably instantly. We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com. Ron, let's wrap things up. Day one, LSU obviously is kind of the star of the show. Florida had a little bit of buzz. It was kind of lackluster, though, for whatever reason. Missouri, everyone was talking about Kelly Bryant. Obviously, he became kind of the focus. Day two, it's jam-packed. We got Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and I'm going to say A&M today. Which one of those teams are you looking forward to the most, or you think is going to be the most intriguing on what they possibly will be saying today?
Probably A&M, Jimbo, I would say. Kirby's pretty straightforward. Matt Luke, Ole Miss, they still got to deal with some probation fallout as far as Scott's limitation. I think A&M's kind of in a place where they're kind of like LSU's rival, close rival now,
right.
and besides Alabama. And I think there's the only team that can really challenge LSU is A&M. And so I'll be interested to see what he has to say. Yeah.
Ron, appreciate you making time for us, as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of the week, and keep up the great work there at Tiger Details.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Ron Higgins, TigerDetails.com, joining us here live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. We got to hit a break. More RP3 in company coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. We're broadcasting live from Radio Row here at SEC Media Days in Hoover. Just wrapped up a terrific conversation catching up with our good friend Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com, who's been to every single SEC Media Day since 1985. Now, that is a heck of a run. First day of SEC Media Days had its highlights. Just to recap, Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, made the announcement. He talked about a multitude of things, and Rod Higgins kind of elaborated a little bit about that, as that Sankey was all over the place with his State of the Union address. Talked about everything from mental health to gambling to targeting. He even brought up Willy Wonka reference for no good reason. But the big news was the gambling, how the presidents throughout the SEC and Sankey in his office are fully supporting federal regulations, in particular when it comes to prop bets. Look, the wave is coming. It's happening. Sports betting is becoming legalized in state after state, not here in the state of Louisiana, obviously, not yet, despite some efforts. But it's happening. And like you heard Ron Higgins talk about, those casinos over in Mississippi are chock full with people placing sports bets. So the conference is going to try to regulate this as much as possible, or try to support regulation, try to put some type of framework involved where they can at least try to control it as much as they can, the best they can. Sankey also talked about the fact that SEC Media Days is moving. It's going to be on the move. Last year was the first year it was not held either in Hoover or Birmingham. That happened last year, where it was held at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta. Okay? That was the first year that occurred. This year it's back in Hoover, right here at the Hyatt Regency, where we're broadcasting from right now. But he makes the announcement yesterday that it's going back to Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame next year. And then in 2021, it's headed to Nashville. Now, will it come back here? Absolutely. I firmly believe that. But I just don't believe that the event will be a year-in, year-out event held here. And Ron Higgins made some valid points there where he said it almost feels like they're awarding locations, cities that host other events. Hoover hosts the SEC baseball tournament and does so extremely well. Nashville has been hosting the SEC basketball tournament and has been doing a very good job of that. Ron said New Orleans is going to be a possibility as well. There's the tie-in for the conference for the SEC to the Sugar Bowl. plus just it makes sense because it is the best city in the country to host an event. But he'll probably come back to Hoover as well. So will it leave Hoover permanently? No. But it'll probably become a rotational thing. It'll be more like what they do with the majors, a few of the majors in golf at the U.S. Open, the PGA Championship, and the Open Championship, where it's rotational. And people will bid on it, and they'll go in that kind of direction. Also yesterday, Florida took to the stage. Missouri took to the stage. Some buzz about the Missouri Tigers, mainly because of Kelly Bryant, the former Clemson starting quarterback, transferring in, entering the elusive and mysterious transfer portal. And he's going to play for Missouri right off the bat. And he stayed committed to playing for Missouri despite the Tigers in the process of appealing a postseason ban handed down by the NCAA for violations. So you have, that was some buzz about yesterday. Florida, obviously, Felipe Franks. Will he be more consistent? That's the whole thing about Felipe Franks. He has the talent. Dan Mullen knows how to develop quarterbacks. But can Felipe Franks be more consistent? He was better towards the tail end of the season than he was in the beginning, but there's still room for improvement. So that was a topic of discussion yesterday. But LSU was definitely the star. Ed O was the star, taking the stage, challenging his defense. He came right out and said it. Defense was not championship-level defense. Not championship-level defense because they struggled against the run last year and they didn't get enough of a pass rush. He talked about that. He talked about a litany of different things when he took to the podium. And one of the things that he talked about was playing Texas. They played the Longhorns in week number 2 in Austin for the first time in program history. And Coach O admitted to the media yesterday he'd much rather face the Longhorns in the very opening week of the season.
I would not like to play them in the middle of the season. You bring up a good point. Our coaches have been studying very hard at Georgia Southern. We have a lot of respect for them. We learned our lesson against Troy. Losing to them was not very good at LSU. And so we will be very, very well prepared against Georgia Southern. Obviously, the natural thing is to look towards Texas, and that's when you're going to get beaten. So I think our team knows that. You know, with the focus right now is going into camp. I love football camp. It's a time for us to focus on ourselves and get better. We have a one-day-at-a-time attitude in our football team. We have a one-game-at-a-time attitude in our football team. So hopefully that prevails this year.
That's Coach O talking about, you know, they'd much rather play Texas early on and that they're focused on one game at a time, one week at a time, preparing that way. But when also asked about Alabama, Coach O did not shy away from the fact that they are not going to de-emphasize playing the Crimson Tide and what that game means to their season and to their chances of winning the SEC West and the Southeastern Conference.
Not at all. I think that it's a great tradition. It's the benchmark. Obviously, Texas A&M is going to be a big game for us. We know that. Auburn's going to be a big game. Florida's going to be a big game. But you know what? Everybody has their rival team. And look, I don't talk about Alabama every day. I mean, I'm going to talk about Alabama during Alabama week. And then I think that you've seen our team. It's not the end all. I will say that. Because you've seen our team bounce back after Alabama losses. We've gone on and beat Arkansas every year. And we finished very strong. So we're taking one game at a time. But obviously, it's an elite football team. It's an elite rivalry. I love the emphasis.
Not shying away from Bama. And that's what you have to do. Now, the losing streak has reached uncomfortable levels for the Tiger fan base and probably uncomfortable levels for the players and the coaching staff. But they're not going to de-emphasize it. They're not going to try to ignore it. They understand, and, you know, pardon the pun here, you know, the elephant in the room is Alabama. You know, as good as of a season that LSU had last year, 10 wins, PlayStation Fiesta Bowl victory. Nationally ranked back in the top 10. Coach O said afterwards of the Alabama game, that was the worst loss at home at Tiger Stadium in a generation. That's what Alabama did to LSU last year. And I think it was serves, but I think it can be used as a positive for LSU. Yes, they were embarrassed at home inside Tiger Stadium by Alabama. But they can use that because that placed more of an emphasis from Coach O and his staff on recruiting and getting bigger, stronger, and nastier in the trenches. And you look at their recruiting class for this year, and you look at their 2020 class, it's apparent. They have placed a premium on getting more athletic, more dynamic, and just angry, gnarly guys on the offense and defensive side of the balls across the lines of scrimmage. The Alabama loss helped propel them to do that. Now, they were already doing that, but it kind of served as a wake-up call as, yes, we're making progress. Yes, we are doing things. We're headed in the right direction. We're not quite there. We're not quite there, and they still have work to do. So we'll see. Coach O, though, also did not shy away, as I said before, from challenging his defense. They gave up nearly 170 yards per game on the ground. He said that's not championship football. That's not LSU football. He preached that during his opening remarks yesterday, day one of SEC Media Days. But he also discussed, and did so almost nonchalantly, that he feels that the young man that's going to be wearing number 7 for LSU this year, Grant Delpit, the consensus All-American safety, is the best returning player, best defensive player, but possibly the best returning player in all of college football.
Grant is, I believe Grant is the best defensive player coming back in college football this year. Ain't no question about it. He can do everything. We needed him in the post against Ole Miss. He got the interception for us. We needed him to get pressure against Ole Miss. We sent him. He got sacks. He is tall. He's smart. He's a great young man. I do believe that he's one of the best defensive players I've ever been around.
One of the best defensive players he's ever been around. That's high praise because Coach O has been coaching a long time, and he's coached and he's recruited some of the best players to ever play the game. That's back from his days at Miami to USC to Ole Miss and now at LSU. And Coach O's not one just to throw out just praise for praise sake. That was day one. LSU, Florida, Missouri, Commissioner Greg Sankey. Day two has officially begun. And we'll give you a little bit of a preview of that as we close out this Tuesday edition of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama. Welcome back to the show as we close out day two of SEC Media Days here in Hoover. Just a reminder, our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row and the exclusive content that's available on 1037thegame.com is proudly presented by the pros at ARCO Equipment. Because when the only road is no road, it's ARCO Equipment. Up today, ladies and gentlemen, Georgia. Ugga, that's right. The Dogs are going to start off things here shortly. As soon as we get off the air, they're going to be taking the stage, Kirby Smart and then his players. So they're going to start things off here on day two. They will be followed by the Ole Miss Rebels, or the Fighting George Faustas, as we like to call them around the studio. And then there'll be a break, and then the afternoon session later today will be Tennessee and Texas A&M. I'm kind of looking forward to that Texas A&M one. I'm not going to lie to you. Be interesting to see how well Jimbo Fisher holds court here in Hoover. So that's what's on tap today. Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Texas A&M. We'll have coverage of all four of those teams taking the stage here at SEC Media Days. You just need to go to 1037thegame.com throughout the day to see videos and stories posted about that. But I've been doing all the talking yesterday and today, and I haven't had the chance to collaborate like I normally do with my good friend, my producer extraordinaire, back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roof and the old one and only Cody Schutz. Cody, you've been watching SEC Media Days from afar. You've heard all the clips. You've heard us dissect it two ways from Sunday here. Your thoughts about what you heard from the first day of SEC Media Days, and particularly LSU, brother?
From the players themselves, Burrow, Delpit, Cushenberry, I feel like those guys kind of gave us more or less what we expected. I don't think we got anything too noteworthy or headline grabby out of the players. You know, we did hear Higgins talk about Joe Burrow and just how comfortable and how funny he is, and how so that does say something to me. Just to see how comfortable he is in his role now. He's embraced the fact that he's, you know, the quarterback for this high-profile team and that the expectations are there. But as far as the players go, nothing extreme comes out of that. But from Coach O, I did like a couple of things Coach O said, especially how he says that they won't de-emphasize that Alabama game. It would have been very, very simple for Coach O to say, yes, of course, we're not going to look at the Alabama game as heavily as we have in the past because, you know, we have other, you know, however many games on the schedule we need to worry about. There are other big games and there are other things that we have on our docket that concern us throughout the season than just worrying about Alabama all year long. Coach O, for me, gave the perfect answer to that, to where he, you know, said that the team is not going to sit there from week one and worry about the Crimson Tide, the Crimson Tide, the Crimson Tide, the Crimson Tide. He did a good job of saying that's not going to be the case, but he also made sure to state that this Alabama game, LSU Alabama, is still to him and to this team a very, very, very important game. He's not going to sit there and tell the guys that, y'all, you know, don't, it's just another game. Let's not, you know, worry any extra about it than we do any other game. He's just telling the guys, let's not worry any less about it. You have to keep that in the back of your mind. And if you're going to sit here and try to tell me that the SEC West isn't really going to be decided come that LSU-Alabama game, you know, you would have a hard time convincing me otherwise. So I appreciate Coach O coming right at that Alabama problem. As you said, addressing the elephant in the room and saying that, yes, LSU has to get over this Alabama hurdle before, you know, they reach the promised land again.
It's a good point there, and you know, I think it is still important, and I agree with you, the game is still a marquee game, even though it may not be in prime time this year, as we found out earlier this year, as CBS did not go for the doubleheader that day, so it will not be in prime time. It will be in the afternoon slot there on CBS.
It's I just like Coach O not shying away from it, because as much as, like you said, the losing streak piling up and so far, you know, when you look at this LSU-Alabama game, it's become one-sided. I can admit that as an LSU fan. It has become one-sided. And it would have been very simple for the coach to be like, we can't look at it that way anymore. We have to come at it, you know, downplay the significance of that game, try to make it feel like less of a big deal for his players so maybe they perform better. But no, that's not what Coach O did. Coach O stood there, addressed the media saying it is a big deal, and then tells the media that he tells his team the same thing, and that, you know, they know when that game comes around that week, it is probably, they might not say it out loud, but to them, the most important week of the season.
Yeah, I like the fact, and he typically doesn't shy away from that kind of stuff, right? That's the other thing that's great about him, that it's just all about accountability, and he owns it, and he's not going to shy away from that. I like the whole tone from LSU yesterday, Cody. Burrow was quite charming. Grant Delpit was confident without being cocky. I liked what I heard from Cushenberry as well. There seems to be this LSU team, with everything that they overcame last year heading into the year and what they were able to accomplish, I think there's an immense amount of just legitimate confidence about this team, how they carry themselves and what their expectations are. And you can just tell, just, you know, body language, everything like that, the way they carry themselves is a team that carries themselves as we know we're good enough, we belong here, mm-hmm. now we just have to go out there and handle our business, right?
Right.
And that's something, you know, and obviously the big roadblock for them is going to be Alabama. The other one that's going to be a hell of a game is going to be Texas A&M. You know, Texas A&M, and that's now going to be another rivalry for the Tigers.
Speaking of Texas A&M, Ray, can I give you $5 to ask Jimbo about the altercation after the LSU game last year? No, I can't do that. No,
you don't have to pay me. I'll just ask that just on my own accord, my friend. Tremendous show. Coming up next, Chip Shots with Rob Spires. Rob's going to be flying solo, but he'll do a great job. Keep it live and local right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.